It's time for the Sandler Training Hour on News Talk 670 KBOI. Here's your host, Jim Stevens.
Welcome to the weekend. Each week I invite keynote Sandler trainers to discuss strategies to improve behavior, attitudes, and techniques using the proven and highly successful Sandler selling system. This week my guest trainer is Jeff Schneider. Jeff is from the Portland, Oregon area. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Jeff has been on the program multiple times. Always excited to have Jeff here because he's very innovative and very insightful. Today we're going to be talking about prospecting in the 21st century. It doesn't take long to realize if you're my age, I'm 58 years old, things change. In the olden days, when I was building my businesses, prospecting involved door-to-door, telephones, a lot of feet on the street, and it was always very effective. Today, if you don't have a strategy that fits today's culture, you're likely not going to be very active in finding your ideal client. So, Jeff, talk to us a little bit about when it comes to identifying who is our ideal client, how do I find them, where do I start?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question, Jim. First of all, I'd like to say I'm an expert on this topic, but I think if I'm honest, we're all trying to figure it out. Things are changing so quickly.
That is true.
And I think one of the things that people like you and me who've been doing this for a while have to embrace is the idea that the way that buyers buy what we sell has fundamentally changed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go back to the previous century, say 20 years ago, buyers depended a lot on salespeople to educate them.
Right.
To educate them about what, you know, is being sold and innovations in the marketplace, stuff like that.
Right.
Not so much anymore. I mean, pretty much anybody can find anything, and it's not that hard. My kids have learned that all they have to do is ask Siri, and Siri will tell them whatever they need to know. And so never has it been more true that we shouldn't spill our candy in the lobby, as David Sandler said, and that our job is not to educate the prospect, it's to find pain. So in addition, I think salespeople 20 years ago, maybe more, tended to view themselves as problem solvers, that they came in and the prospect or client said, here's what I need help with, and they solved the problem.
Right.
Again, the ability to solve problems has become much easier than it's ever been before as well, and therefore problem identification is really what the savvy 21st century salespeople need to be focused on. In other words, the problem that the prospect brings the salesperson is usually not the real problem. They're often coming with readily identifiable downstream problems, and we need to be able to move it back upstream and find the systemic problems that are probably lurking beneath the surface. So prospecting is very, very different, and I also think that the savvy salesperson needs to have kind of a marketing hat along with their
right.
prospecting hat so that they are where the prospect goes to look for information on what they sell.
I think you're very insightful in recognizing that the buyer today has come up with what they think their problem is, and they've identified
yep.
potential solutions because they've used Siri, they've used the internet. They are trying to fix their own problem. It's the equivalent
yep.
of self-medication, right? And what they
That's
really
right.
need is
That's
a
right.
trusted advisor, somebody who it will ask the kind of questions to help them discover their blind spots. You know, if they knew the real problem, they could fix it more easily. And if they use the solution they've come up with, chances are it isn't going to really fix the problem.
Yeah, in most cases. That's right. I was doing a training a couple years back for a local law firm, and I was talking about prospecting activities, and I anticipated that lawyers wouldn't be open to cold calling, and most of them weren't.
Yeah.
And I made the comment, I said, look, cold calling probably isn't something that any of you are going to engage in. And one of the partners said, I do. And I said, you do? And he said, yeah, I like making cold calls. I like meeting new people who might be potential targets. And his managing partner stepped in and said, I don't think you should be doing that. And he said, why? He said, here's why. He says, if a copier salesperson calls me on the phone and I need copiers and they're selling a brand of copiers that I actually have heard, you know, that I might be interested in, I'm going to say, no thanks, hang up the phone, go out to LinkedIn, and I'm going to ask my contacts who they know that I should be speaking to regarding copiers. And I just thought, wow, prospecting has fundamentally changed.
It really has. And I think it's changed in ways that we look at it. Our beliefs about prospecting have changed. One thing I think that remains pretty consistent over not only the decades but the centuries is this thing we called prospecting avoidance. It's something that's required out of our comfort zone, and maybe it's maybe using social media is out of your comfort zone, so you don't do that, you avoid that. So how do I get to that place, Jeff, where I recognize I need to do this, I want to do this, and I want to do it effectively?
Yeah. So first of all, let's define prospecting a little bit, because I think that that might be helpful, particularly in 2017. I think that one definition of prospecting, you know, think about a prospector back in 1849 in the Sierra Nevada foothills. I mean, what does a prospector, Jim, look like to you? What image comes into your mind?
Somebody who's very dirty, very rough, underfed, working hard, and probably not achieving their goals, but they're full of hope.
Right, right.
Optimistic.
I picture Yosemite Sam.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just in my mind, it's Yosemite Sam. But you're right. He's dirty. And so prospecting then is sifting through all that is not gold. It is dirty business. And there will be days for the prospector back in 1849, weeks in which they never see gold. They're simply digging. And so it's sifting through all which is not gold. That's the first definition, because it's easy to pick up gold nuggets. It's hard to dig and dig and dig and dig and dig. The second definition that I use for prospecting is more to the point, and that is interrupting somebody's day. So now we can differentiate between activities that support prospecting and actual prospecting.
Hmm.
So activities that support prospecting would be a lot of social media. So for instance, I'm out on LinkedIn all the time, every single day, and I am responding to messages that people send to me and likes and shares and so on. I am posting, I am commenting and liking and sharing some of my target, you know, potential clients' postings on LinkedIn. None of that I'm going to call prospecting, though.
Hmm.
That's supportive. What is actually prospecting is picking up the phone, or to a lesser extent, sending an email or an in-mail and asking somebody to do something. And so that concept of interrupting somebody, I think, gets to the heart of why people are so reluctant.
Hmm.
And because it is so easy these days to send in-mails and emails and to play around on social media, I think a lot of people fool themselves into thinking they're prospecting when really what they're doing is probably closer to marketing than prospecting. It's a good thing. It's a necessary thing. But if that's all you do, you're probably going to not set up many appointments.
So we have to fight against our own mindset that says, my mother taught me never interrupt, and you're telling me prospecting is interrupting. So what activity do I need to engage in to get myself permission to interrupt?
Let's talk about this way, too. I'm not saying either or, okay? I am neither old school. You know, old school would be forget about LinkedIn. It doesn't work. Just pick up the phone. Neither am I completely sold on the approach many technology firms in particular have, which is nothing but social media and email and, you know, sending messages out there and seeing who responds. Because there are some people who would advocate only opt-in prospecting.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain that for a minute. Opt-in in an email newsletter means that I don't send it out to somebody cold. I only wait for people to say, I'd like to be on your newsletter. So opt-in prospecting, this is a term we're hearing a lot more of these days, is you never reach out to anybody. Some people would say it is rude to reach out to anybody who has not first requested information from you.
Mm.
So I'm not an advocate of opt-in prospecting. I think you have to do both. It's important that you're on LinkedIn. It's important that you're sending messages out. It's important that your ideal clients can find you when they go looking for you. But when somebody starts to raise their hand, we got to pick up the phone.
My guest today is Jeff Schneider. Jeff is from Portland, Oregon. Jeff, give your contact information in case one of our listeners would like to reach out and talk with you.
Sure. Phone number 971-227-3266. Email jeffs@sandler.com.
I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. Visit our website at www.crossroads.sandler.com and download the 3 biggest mistakes salespeople should never make. For specific questions or comments, you can call us at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. And welcome to one of my favorite segments, Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to learn more about the real heroes of our society and economy, independent business owners and leaders. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training, and we've invited Louis Armstrong. Believe it or not, Louis Armstrong is here to speak with us and share some of his strategies and experience. His company is Killer Way. That's Killer Way, W-H-E-Y. And I think one of the best ways that any of us can learn is through hearing the life lessons of the daily battles that people like Lewis are going through. So, Lewis, tell us a little bit about your company.
Yeah, my name is Lewis Armstrong. I'm the founder of Killer Whey, and we have been producing this product for about a year now, but what we have here is essentially a guilt-free ice cream. It's really high in protein, so our little single-serving cups have four times the amount of protein as a standard ice cream. Also, no sugar added, so it's low-calorie, 150 calories in our single-serving cup. So.
And how does it taste?
And it actually tastes good. That's the really weird part about this. And it has a normal ice cream texture and actually tastes good. And I've done thousands of samples now and converted everybody that was a skeptic. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So as the founder, what gave you the genius attack in the beginning that said, somebody should create this, I'll do it?
Well, genius is strong, but it seems obvious once you start looking at it, but it was really one of those selfish things where I made this for myself. So this is back in like 2011 when I came up with this idea, but I was just at a gym one day. It was really hot outside, so I bought myself an ice cream sandwich at a gas station after working out. And then, of course, the guilt kind of hit. Like, I just did this, you know, good workout, and then now I'm pumping all this sugar and, you know, pretty much something with no value into my body.
Yeah.
And thought, you know, why can't this ice cream sandwich just have, like, at least some protein
in it.
And that's where the whole thing was born, was just thinking of an ice cream sandwich. But that was 2011, so there's kind of a gap there where I had to make things happen, I guess.
And what was your background, Lewis, before you started this company?
So it's pretty applicable. I'm a food scientist. So I graduated from the University of Idaho and Washington State. They have a shared food science program. So I did corporate world, and I've basically been in dairy production and quality assurance for over 10 years now. So that's kind of my background that allows me to make something like this and scale it as quickly as I have.
So what was the first step? You have the idea. You're a food scientist. Do you have to be a chef too to figure this out?
No. So just, you know, when I started off, I did a lot of R&D, creating new products for a company, which included a little bit of ice cream, but mostly cheese and a lot of dairy products. So having that background of developing products kind of, you know, led me down the road of being able to do shelf life studies and kind of being able to tweak recipes and look at it from a scientific standpoint. So that definitely helped kind of streamline things. I got off the ground pretty quick after test batches and scaled up to using this creamery that I have access to right now.
So were you doing the test batches yourself, or were you outsourcing that to someone?
Nope, all by myself. So
you bought some whey? I'm guessing it's from whey.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell us the mechanics there.
Yeah, so it's really a standard ice cream base. It just, the unique thing is that amount of whey protein isolate into it. So you're adding a lot of solids to it, and you want to be at a certain level with ice cream. So I've got a whole huge book on ice cream science, which seems kind of weird if you think about it, but
right?
There is a lot of science behind ice cream making. So really it was just kind of playing with that total solids level, trying to reach that threshold of, you know, how much ice cream can, or how much whey can I put into ice cream. So I'm very high up there. So really, yeah, it was just kind of the texture and finding the right point where this kind of all made sense and actually still tasted good.
So it took a lot of experimentation. So do you own a patent on it?
Nope, no patent on the actual process or the ingredients. There's nothing.
How do you protect what you do?
So hopefully it's just building a brand. I'm trying to create a lifestyle brand here, something fun that can kind of represent the people that I'm targeting, which are similar to me, you know, active people that want to eat something that doesn't have a ton of guilt and actually has some value to it. So good desserts.
So you've been 1 year that you've had the product, and you've already gained some traction. Our listeners, they could go to what, Winco?
Yeah. So in the Treasure Valley, I'm in three of the Wincos, which we've been there for about 2 months now. So fairly new, but gets going awesome.
And
so
how are sales there in those?
Really good, especially downtown Winco. Just keeping on the shelf's been pretty difficult.
Wow, good problem.
Yeah, it's a great
problem to
have. So just a learning process to see how I kind of maintain my inventory. So things are a lot smoother now than from the beginning. We're also in the Eagle Winco and the one on Fairview in Milwaukee, which is by the main mall. Then a handful of other grocery stores too, like Rosar's in the Huckleberry section there too. And then, of course, the Boise Co-op, both of their locations. They were our first grocery store back last September.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so the company by now must be cash flowing.
We're cash flowing, yeah. We got some money coming in.
And you must feel pretty good about the future if you've got some clients. You've actually test marketed and people still empty the shelves.
Exactly. So that's kind of the goal here. We literally just bootstrapped. So it's myself and my wife, Liz, that have made all this happen. So really, like, we are limited to just being able to produce and distribute in the area. But
right. That
was kind of the idea anyways, to test this market. It's a great market here in Boise. We've got every type of demographic you can think of and a lot of grocery store chains and headquarters of those chains here too. So it's a perfect place to start and test.
Do you have any agreement with some of your current vendors that if it works, they're going to take take you to a larger
No,
footprint?
Not yet. Nothing guaranteed. If I do great locally here, that just helps my case.
That case study.
When I start talking to that
really
buyer
helps.
About, hey, will you let me into the region now? And that plan to scale. So, and these grocery stores, I mean, a lot of them are, the frozen resets only happen once a year, so you kind of have one shot at it. So right now is my proving grounds. It's summertime. It's time to sell some ice cream.
Right,
so
right.
I'm out there, boots on the ground, trying to, you know, expose the brand and get more customers and get people to try it, because not too many people just kind of walk through the frozen aisle and just see what's new that day. So.
Right, right. Yeah, I can't even remember going through the frozen food.
Yeah, exactly. I think that a lot of people are like that. So
yeah.
We're out there, you know, doing events, be it marathons. We've got an ice cream bike, so we're out where people are being active and trying to get it in front of people's faces, or I guess in their mouths would be the way to do it.
So help me unpack for our listeners some of the challenges that a business owner, entrepreneur faces. Here you are, a scientist, and your primary role is sales. Is that a tough pill to swallow?
Yeah, it's a learning curve for me. So the production side, quality assurance, scaling production of food and monitoring co-packers is something I'm used to. So as far as growing this company from that standpoint, it doesn't scare me. It scares me a little bit, but
right, right.
You know, at least I have experience with that. But I'm not a businessman and I am not a salesman, although that is kind of also my job right now.
Right,
I am
right.
This kind of product and this company. So that is a learning curve. And I'm just leaning on people that do have experience with it to try to figure this whole thing out and get advice from them.
That's awesome. That's
and it's
awesome.
It's enjoyable for me. I like doing new things. So getting out there and exposing myself to different sides of the business is a lot of fun for me.
So if a listener is tuned into the program and they're thinking, wow, this is awesome. What an underdog. And they wanted to help. What could they do to help you get your brand use
yeah.
or traction?
So the best thing for us right now, as far as kind of exposing our brand, is social media. So if people actually buy the product, that would help too.
Go buy the product.
Tell all their friends to buy the product. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
And then get it on social media. Tell us why you like it, what you're doing with it. If there's anything unique besides just eating it like ice cream, you can have it for breakfast, throw it in a waffle, things like that are kind of unique and fun. People mix it with like coffee in the mornings as well too.
Nice.
So there's some unique fun things you can do with it. And that's kind of the brand we want to have. So social media is our platform for growing. It's, you know, a cheap way to expose your brand in ways. So
they could go buy your product. After they buy it, they could promote you.
Yeah, because they're going to love it, obviously.
Right.
So.
And I'm guessing one great way to promote you would be go to the store manager and thank them for carrying your product.
Absolutely. And I've heard it quite a few times from other companies, but even, you know, stores that I'm not in, if you ask them to carry your product enough, that does trigger people to talk to those buyers and gets back to the buyers. So not in Whole Foods yet, and kind of been working on that one for a long time. Just anywhere else, too, that you see.
Yeah. Well, very outstanding. Louis Armstrong is my guest today. He's the founder of Killer Way. That's Killer, W-H-E-Y. Louis, give your contact information in case somebody online would like to reach out to you.
Yeah, actually, just go to our website. There's kind of a contact info there, but my email is pretty simple. It's just armstrong@killerway.com, and that's the best way to kind of reach me and if you want to help out.
Thank you so much for being on the program, Louis. Really appreciate having you. On Entrepreneur Radio, we share the story of local and regional leaders, individuals who drive change in the economy. We get to see how they've achieved success. If you'd like to be on the program, please reach out to me at 208-429-9275 or on the web. You can shoot us an email, crossroads@sandler.com or crossroads.sandler.com if you'd like to go to our website. If you don't feel qualified to share your story and would like help getting qualified, call me and book an appointment. We'll sit down and talk a little bit about your business, what challenges are you having, and if there's anything we at Sandler Training could do to help you find the breakthrough that you are working so hard for and that you need and deserve. This is Jim Stevens, and we're going to be back with another segment of Behind the Business just after this.
Sandler Training develops a plan to make sure your team has the skills they need to close the sale. Learn more online at crossroads.sandler.com.
So far, I've been speaking with Jeff Schneider from Portland, Oregon. Jeff and I have been talking about prospecting in the 21st century. Let's go into a little more detail, Jeff. How do I find the balance between using the social media tools that are available for me to open doors and doing what you suggested in the first segment, which is defining prospecting by interrupting someone's day?
I think that it's key that from a belief standpoint, we believe that both are integral to our success. So I would not advocate for most salespeople in most industries strictly cold calling. I think cold calling is harder than it's ever been for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. Gatekeepers, the secondary gatekeeper of voicemail. I'm this way myself. If somebody calls me out of the blue and I don't recognize the phone number or the area code, I don't answer. I go straight to voicemail and I screen it there.
Right.
And a variety of other challenges. I think that when you call somebody cold, it feels colder than if you did it 5 or 10 years ago. So I'm not advocating that, but I'm also not advocating a strategy of strictly doing LinkedIn and social media and hoping for the best. Hope is not a good strategy. So I think that salespeople need to get comfortable with LinkedIn. Here's part of my advice on LinkedIn. Number one, use it. Complete your profile. Get your profile to the point where LinkedIn says you're at 90%. That means that you've got enough good stuff there to be worthwhile. Get a good photo. Get some recommendations, some testimonials from clients and other people. Write a nice, succinct description of who you are and what you do. It's not Facebook, but it's also not a resume. This is your individual website. Whether or not you know it, every single business person has a website.
Right.
And when you call somebody and leave a voicemail, what most people do these days is they go out to LinkedIn, they look at your profile. If they're not impressed, they just go away. They don't return your call. If they are impressed, then there's a chance that they might reach out to you.
Great.
It's all taking place behind the scenes. Secondly, when you come into the office every morning, 7:45, open up LinkedIn. Keep it open. Every single time that you have a conversation with somebody, which is, you know, more than a 60-second conversation, hang up, make a note of it in your CRM, and send them a LinkedIn invitation. Every single time you have a meeting with somebody, send them a LinkedIn invitation. Every time you get a business card at a networking event, send them a LinkedIn invitation. I used to think, Jim, that my CRM was everything to me. And over the last 2 years, I've come to the conclusion that my LinkedIn connections are every bit as important as my CRM. And so I'm trying to grow that on a daily and weekly basis. I've got about 2,600 connections right now. I've got goals to expand that by about 1,000 every single year, maybe a little bit more than that, and I'm working on it.
One of the things that people do I think we avoid using LinkedIn because we don't see any immediate fruit. And what I'm hearing Jeff suggest is that this is really a long-term play. It's something that I'm going to be disciplined at because I'm building the brand of Jim Stevens or the brand of Jeff Schneider. And in creating that following, it allows me to have an audience that I can draw from should I need it.
That's right. Absolutely. And so my LinkedIn is open all day long, and so is my CRM. And when it's time for me to make a phone call, shame on me if I just make the phone call. Mm-hmm. I should go out to LinkedIn and take a look at this particular person, their profile, learn something about them. And if it's somebody I should be connected to, because sometimes out of neglect I'm not, I just send the invitation, right? But more than that, when it's somebody that's a little bit colder, I've never had a conversation with them before, I pull up their profile and I take a look at who I know that's connected to them. Now, if I only have 100 connections, it's a little bit harder to find people that I know who are connected to them. But at 2,700 connections in my LinkedIn database, when I'm looking at the CEO of a local software company, say a $5 million company, I will not have one or two clients who are raving fans that know this person. I'll have 20 or 30.
Yeah.
And so I get to pick who I want to speak to on this particular day to give me some information about this person and to see if they're willing to introduce me to this person.
And it also gives you another soft touch to your clients. So here's somebody who is a client that maybe I haven't had a personal conversation with. Now I have a good excuse to call them. So it really is serving you in multiple ways.
We're talking about prospecting here, but it's hard not to just go deep into LinkedIn.
Right, right.
Theoretically, I mean, if you know your ideal client, if you know the characteristics of the types of companies you want to reach, for me, it's $1 to $20 million companies headquartered in Oregon, ideally here in the Portland metro area, selling business products or services that are complex, mission critical, fairly expensive. I can do a search on these companies. Mm-hmm. I pull up the companies and then here's what I do these days. You know, I'll find a company that has, let's say, 80 employees and I'll start scanning their salespeople and I'll just send out cold invites to their salespeople. I'm not sure if you're doing this.
No, haven't.
But let's say they have 10 salespeople. I'll send out cold invites to all of them. Five will accept. on average, sometimes more. If it's a sales manager, I'll send out a cold invite to them. About a third to half of them will accept. I usually don't send it out to the CEO, but there's three dots to the right. It's kind of hidden, but when you see these three dots, you click on it, you can follow that person. So I begin to follow the CEO, and what that means is I see all of their posts on LinkedIn, and I can begin to like them, and I can begin to share them, and even comment on them so that we can create a little bit of familiarity. Meanwhile, what's happening is that because I'm posting my videos and my white papers and my quotes on a daily basis, their salespeople are beginning to like and share my postings, which now becomes visible to the CEO of the company. When he or she sees two or three of their people consistently commenting on or sharing my posts, it's like they begin to know me, and now it's time to actually pick up the phone and call them.
So you're really warming up that initial prospecting effort, that point when I'm going to interrupt, I've warmed it up so that instead of a closed door, it might have a slight crack open.
What I'm trying to do, and it takes maybe 2 or 3 weeks, perhaps, sometimes a little faster, but I'm trying to create a sense that the CEO, or if it's a larger company, the VP of sales, already sort of knows me because they're seeing their people viewing my stuff, which means that they're starting to view it themselves, and it's kind of like, huh, who is this guy that my salespeople are suddenly commenting on his videos? And so then when I pick up the phone and I say, my name's familiar, they're like, kinda.
Yeah. Good. It's a brilliant strategy. Now that it's time to actually interrupt, what's that next step?
Well, the next step really, well, there are some options. Okay. The next step should be a phone call. Mm. Sometimes, however, I don't have the actual phone number. And so I could go through the gatekeeper. I prefer not to. It's just usually not effective when I'm making a cold call to a CEO or VP of sales of a large company and I'm going through the front receptionist.
Yeah.
I use ZoomInfo. I don't know if you use ZoomInfo.
A little bit.
But ZoomInfo is a great resource tool, list building tool. And so I've got the app in my LinkedIn so that when I'm looking at the CEO of this company, I can click on the ZoomInfo icon, and it often gives me, usually frankly, gives me their email and their direct dial number. So when I have their direct dial number, I want to pick up the phone. Now I want to talk about this for a minute. Pick up the phone, okay? We have to discipline ourselves to pick up the phone when it's time to pick up the phone. If I don't have the direct dial number, I'll opt for an in-mail within LinkedIn. Research indicates that there's somewhere between 3 and 7 times more likely to respond to an in-mail than to an email. My last option is an email. I don't think email truly is interrupting their day, but I think in-mail sort of qualifies as an interruption in the sense that most people are going to see that and not perceive it quite as much as spam. They're going to perceive it as something which they have to respond to one way or another.
My guest today is Jeff Schneider. Jeff's been sharing with us some strategies on prospecting in the 21st century. Jeff, give your contact information in case there's somebody who'd like to reach out to you.
Sure. Website, www.schneider.sandler.com. And my phone number is 971-227-3266.
I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you like the show and want to subscribe to our content, contact us by email through crossroads@sandler.com, crossroads@sandler.com, or reach out to us and ask how to subscribe at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Jeff, so far we've been talking conceptual, but I'd like us to get to the technical. I don't suppose you'd be able to walk us through some of the technical execution of the Sandler approach when it comes to using both LinkedIn and actually picking up the phone. I love your definition of prospecting. It's interrupting someone's day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, happy to. I think that, you know, let's talk about what LinkedIn is ideally. I think LinkedIn has baffled some business people, particularly salespeople, because they think of it as Facebook for business, and there's some similarities. I mean, let's talk tactics here.
Sure.
What I do with LinkedIn on a weekly basis is I use a tool called Buffer. There's another one called Hootsuite, and there's probably a whole bunch of others, but they're probably the leaders. And Buffer is well named because it creates a buffer for you to be able to load content. So I have a Sunday night ritual. I'm usually 7, 8 o'clock on Sunday night when I'm planning the week. I will set aside an hour. Maybe there's a baseball game on TV or something like that. And I load up my Buffer. And so I post 5 times a day, 25 times a week, Monday through Friday. Buffer allows you to pick the times of day that you're going to post. I'm posting it at 8:30, 11:30, 1:30, 4:30, and I think I have one at 8:30 at night. And I've got various pieces of content. So I'm pulling white papers and books and, you know, news of upcoming seminars off my website. I have motivational quotes on sales and business. I have Sandler rules that I'm posting. Plus, I do my own videos. Jim, as you know, I've turned my spare office into a video studio, and I'm trying to crank out one new 2-minute sales tip on video, as well as interviewing thought leaders and business leaders here in the Portland area. And so I'm loading up my buffer every Sunday night with these posts. That's the first thing that I'm doing. And then I'm checking every day to see who's liking it, who's sharing it. And I also encourage my clients and, you know, strategic alliances, when they're looking on LinkedIn, to share what I quote, because it just takes it and exponentially sends the message out. So sometimes I'll get 50 views, sometimes I'll get 100, sometimes I'll get 3,000 because so many people liked it and shared it.
It sounds like a daunting task, Jeff, to come up with every week 25 pieces of information that I'm going to pre-write and then pre-load so that it sends out automatically. You make it sound easy.
Yeah, well, there's some pre-work. So, for instance, I've got over 40, 50 videos now, and I'm, you know, only coming up with a new one once or twice a month. And so I've got a library. I've got a library of white papers that Sandler, of course, has put together for us. So this will be easier for some people than for others. I don't think it's that hard for you and me, Jim, because we just have a lot of content from Sandler. Yeah. But I think you do have to think to yourself, what are the sorts of information that people really like to see on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
I'll give you a clue. Most people don't like to read these days.
So the
things I get the most traction from are short quotes from famous people and my videos. I just think that's the way people like to digest information these days. They don't like to read 12-paragraph articles.
And I'm guessing a little bit of something is better than nothing. So even if you're only doing 2 or 3 a day, that's going to be better than not paying attention.
That's right. That's right. It's not mandatory that you're posting, but I think if you're serious about using LinkedIn, you should come up with a strategy for posting. Because again, what I'm trying to do here is let people who have not yet raised their hand discover me and get to know me. This is why video is so important. They're getting to know me. They see what I look like. They see how I talk, see what I say, and they're coming to some real quick decisions about whether this guy has the wherewithal to be of help to them or not. So posting is one part of my strategy. Seeing who is viewing and sharing my information is part of the strategy, and that's what tips me off when it's time to start moving in and actually starting the conversation.
But
the other part of this, which is important, because that's just kind of a one-to-many strategy, and I don't know who's going to respond to it, is that I also do searches on a regular basis to locate companies and people that I'm interested in targeting, and I begin sending out invites and following those people as well.
Love it. Great, great strategy.
So the next part of it then, I think, is I think that whenever possible, I don't want to do anything cold. I want to get a referral. And so specifically what I do is I identify clients, former clients, and people that know me and trust me, and I ask them for introductions. So the email might sound like this. Jim, tell me if you're okay with this. I'd like to peruse your connections on LinkedIn. And by the way, please feel free to do the same with my connections. And I want to see if maybe 3 or 4 people in your connections are people that I have some interest in perhaps speaking with. Would you be okay if I do that? And if so, send you an email or give you a call if I come up with 3 or 4 people that I'm curious about. And you can let me know if any of those people are, in your opinion, worth me having a conversation with or not. And by the way, Jim, it's perfectly okay if the answer is none of the above. Sound good?
Sure. So is that a conversation or is that an email you're sending or can it be either or?
It's either or. The way I just scripted it there was email.
Okay.
Right. So it's somebody that I know pretty well.
Yeah.
It's somebody that I'm pretty confident would say, absolutely.
Right.
And then I go in, I take a look at their connections. I use some advanced search capabilities, which you probably have to have premium to be able to effectively do. And I locate 3 or 4 CEOs I'm interested in. I just send the email back saying, hey, Jim, thanks for letting me take a look at your database. I came up with these 4 people, name and company. Do you think any of them would be people that would be worth a conversation? And if so, what do you think might be the best way to introduce the two of us to each other? What usually happens here is that one or two are people I end up getting introductions to. If they don't know any of the four, now they're going to try and find somebody that they can introduce me to because they don't want to look bad, even
right,
though I'm
right.
trying to take the pressure off of them.
That's great.
So it's just a simple way to tap into what LinkedIn really is, which is the world's largest professional referral network.
So now that I've identified someone, am I going to facilitate an electronic introduction? And if so, what's that template sound like?
Yeah, I used to try and get people to speak on the phone with somebody and have a conversation. And what I found is everything goes to voicemail these days. So if you're willing to try and introduce me to Bob and you leave him a voicemail, Bob doesn't return your call. And now you're kind of hung out saying, do I call him again? Do I call Jeff back? So I found it's just simpler to say, usually, Jim, it makes the most sense to just send an email introduction. And, you know, you may just want to say to him that you've worked with me before. Jeff is my sales trainer and coach. He's helped our company a lot. I don't know if it would make sense for you to work with Jeff, but I do believe a 5-minute conversation would make a lot of sense. I'll let you guys take it from here.
So is that formatted with some instructions that say you might want to just copy and paste the text below into an email to both of us?
Yep. Now, I don't want to be too presumptuous. I might want to say to them, are you comfortable with what you might say, or would you like some verbiage other people have been comfortable with? And if they'd like to see the verbiage, I'm going to put it that way. What I want to do here, though, is have some kind of an endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I get clients who are very noncommittal. They'll just say, Jeff is a sales trainer and Jim is an accountant. Don't know if it makes any sense for you guys to talk, but for what it's worth, there you go. And I'm like, that's kind of cold.
Yeah, it's a cold one.
If we've worked together, I'd like some kind of an endorsement with a recommendation, not a recommendation that says the two of you should work together.
Yeah.
Because that's going to scare them off.
Yeah.
Just a recommendation that says, I don't know if the two of you should work together, but I do think the two of you should know each other and at least have a 5-10 minute phone conversation.
And we've just got 15 seconds left. Is it appropriate at that time to even suggest that I'll buy lunch? Let's have a meeting?
If you can get the person who is referring you or introducing you to come to lunch or coffee, that is the best. If they aren't willing to do that, then I usually like to start off with a phone call because I think that's the easiest ask that has the highest likelihood of being accepted.
My guest today has been Jeff Schneider. One last time, Jeff, share with us your contact information in case someone would like to reach out to you.
Sure. The website is schneider.sandler.com. And my email is jeffs@sandler.com.
This is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. My calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. Are you tired of forgiving your employees for not trying? Are you bored with the daily ritual of at least and just enough that you allow to haunt you on the weekends? Are you ready to test yourself and to see if you could do it? Are you ready to test your team? Call us at 208-429-9275. Ask to set up a discovery meeting and we'll set up a conversation. This is Sandler Training, where you find power in reinforcement. And welcome to one of my favorite segments of the program. In this segment, we interview people who have a vision for the future and are working to make changes occur in our community. I have a member of my church with me today, Stephanie Schoenfeld. Stephanie is Mrs. Southeast Boise. Tell us about your title.
So you get your title when you sign up for the pageant, and then you compete for the Mrs. Idaho title.
And whatever compelled you to want to compete for Mrs. Idaho?
Well, that's a really interesting story.
Yeah.
So 3 years ago, about, I went to watch a friend of mine in the Mrs. Idaho pageant. And right before the pageant started, her husband turned around to me and said, next year it's you. I said, no way, never, not me. But then as the pageant went on, I was hearing the ladies tell about their causes and their passions and what they were doing with the pageant. And I started thinking, well, what would be mine? And I thought, well, that's really easy. I am an occupational therapy assistant in a pediatric clinic.
Oh.
And I work with kids with special needs. And one of my clients, a 14-year-old with autism, had told me during one of her sessions that she didn't have any friends and that kids were mean to her. And I said, well, we got to get out there and educate them. And so this idea grew to start a foundation or organization called Cammie's Voice after my friend's daughter who had committed suicide due to bullying.
Really?
And so I thought, well, that's easy. I'm going to do the pageant to get the word out there and open doors and, you know, use it as a vehicle to help create connections and things.
And help stop that bullying.
Yeah. And one of the reasons I thought I would never want to do a pageant is because I myself was horribly bullied all the way through school, and even I realized that adults also bully, and women, you know, we're not always so nice. And so I thought, you know, I had this stereotype in my head that pageant women were probably not the nicest,
kind of
backstabbing, the whole thing, you know. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to just put up with them for this cause. And so next thing you know, I'm signing up for a pageant.
And I'm guessing part of the reason you said no, never is because it's got to be way out of your comfort zone.
Totally.
Wow. I just admire that courage. Yeah. That's tremendous.
And I think due to the bullying and things like that that have happened to me, I had very low self-esteem, low confidence. And it takes a lot of confidence
to do
that. Oh, my
gosh. Yeah, I couldn't
do it. Oh, come on.
I wouldn't look good in a dress.
You look great in the swimsuit.
So going into this, you knew it was going to be out of your comfort zone.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's one of the things entrepreneurs face is, should I take the risk? Should I step out of my comfort zone and do something that, A, I don't know if I'll be successful, and B, I'm not sure where it's going to lead. So tell our listeners about your journey emotionally to get out of your comfort zone.
Well, I had a little bit of help because I was, for most of my life, I was a competitive gymnast and a college cheerleader. So that helped a bit with the getting up in front of people.
Good.
But I still did have that fear of being around all these women and how I would be treated and things like that. But I went to the first pageant workshop, and they had us one at a time stand up and introduce ourselves and say why we were doing the pageant. And I started listening to these women. I'm like, they are so much like me and so like-minded and just motivated and wanted to get out there and change their communities. And so I thought, actually, this isn't so bad.
I can fit in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing, I've always wanted a sister, and now I have like 50. And I really have met some of the most wonderful women and some of the best friends forever.
And if you're just listening on the radio, you should go to our Facebook page because you'll get to see Stephanie in her full regalia. She really is looking spiffy. You can see why she won Miss Southeast Boise, Idaho. Very beautiful. So do you have to do some version of talent?
Thank goodness there is no talent. If I had to do a talent, it would probably be like knitting to music or something like that. Probably not so entertaining. No, the categories are interview, which is worth 50% of the score, and then 25% is evening gown, and 25% is swimsuit or fitness award.
Wow.
So whoever is Mrs. Idaho and hopefully eventually Mrs. America needs to be in pretty good shape for keeping up with the schedule.
And I bet it took a long time, huh? Does it take a lot of time to go through this?
To go through the working out.
Yeah, right.
It's a lot of working out.
Getting prepared, exercise.
Yeah, we do. It's really up to you how much you want to be involved and how many appearances or volunteering events you want to do. But a lot of us are, like I said already, are really community-minded and wanting to get out there and be involved. And so we do quite a few appearances and events and volunteer for things.
So, you know, stereotypically, I think of Mrs. America as something that's ego-driven, but it's really more passion-driven.
You know, and that was...
It's a platform for you to share what your heart's passion is.
Exactly. And these women are also intelligent and just so nice and friendly, down to earth. I really didn't see that whole ego thing that I had my own stereotypes about.
Right.
I thought I was going to see that, and it's really not like that.
So talk to us a little more detail about your passion for helping people who have been bullied.
So I am going to be doing speaking engagements, and my first one will be at our church youth group. I'm going to be talking to the youth about bullying and different types of bullying and have them kind of brainstorm with me and what can we do to stop this and end this. And as a small part of it, I also want to, it's not small, but I want to also add in there the suicide prevention and awareness and how bullying often does lead to that.
And do you have some specific strategies, tactics, or tools that you're giving to the kids to help them not take bullying personally?
Well, yeah, I'm going to be giving to them what I've had to do throughout my life and just let them know that oftentimes people bully because they've been bullied or, you know, you don't know what's going on in their home life. And really, it's not personal. So my bully in high school ended up 5 years after high school graduation calling me out of the blue. And she had gotten married and she had a baby and she realized how important people were. And so she called me and she wanted to ask me to forgive her for everything she had done. And she said that she was so insanely jealous of me that she couldn't even see straight. You know, and so that's her reason. And took a little bit of time, but I was able to forgive her and she became one of my very best friends. She was one of my bridesmaids at my wedding.
Really?
And
wow.
We're friends to this day.
That's amazing. And I bet that took a lot of guts on her part to say, I'm sorry.
Oh, huge. Yeah. I don't know that that happens very often.
Yeah, I don't either. I would not have thought of bullying as being caused by jealousy, but now that you mention that, it really does make sense.
Yeah.
I think the bully is generally the more insecure person in the relationship.
They absolutely are. And if kids just learn that the reason behind bullying, at least for me, it was a whole lot easier to not take it personally and to get through without doing something like taking my own life. You know?
We have a couple of, in our Sandler training, if you're a longtime listener, you've probably heard us talk about the theory called IR theory, identity and role. It's how to separate who I am, my inside me, from what I do, my outside me. And I really think that's a tactic and strategy that needs to be taught at the earliest age in kids. Because if I am not what I do, I am who I am on the inside. And one of our mantras is, your opinion of me is none of my business. So if you remember that their opinion, a bully's opinion of me is none of my business, then I don't care what they think and what they do. It doesn't impact me because I'm not going to take it personally.
Exactly.
It's their issue, not mine. So as we wrap up here, Stephanie, tell us what are some one or two things that you would recommend people do if they find themselves in a position where they are being bullied or they have a child who's going through that.
Well, interesting you say that because I have also had the heartbreaking experience of watching my own daughter go through that and have had to counsel her and help her deal with this. And I've just told her, you know, just pray for them. Just somebody's bullying you, just stop right there and pray for them because they're going through something. There's a reason why they're doing that. People don't just do that. So just pray for them. And I found that whenever I pray for somebody who's not being very nice to me, then it changes me and how I feel about that person.
Which also changes them in some way. That's a great advice. And then you mentioned counseling. Mm-hmm. What kind of counseling should someone seek out if they are feeling like they need somebody to talk to?
You know, it's going to be different for everybody. We have been going to family counseling with my daughter, and there's a Christian counseling center called Cornerstone Counseling, and we've gotten in with a really great guy that my daughter really respects, and she'll say all the time, well, Dr. Joe said, you know, but just find somebody who you feel that you can trust and confide in. And
so if there's somebody listening to the program that is thinking, gee, I would like to talk to Stephanie, do you mind giving your contact information?
So you can look me up on Facebook. It's Stephanie Privet - Schoenfeld.
You better spell that.
Yeah. So Stephanie is Stephanie Privet is Privet - Schoenfeld. Schoenfeld.
Thank you so much, Stephanie, for being on the program.
Can I also say that I have a motto? You asked me what advice I would give kids, and the motto is actually a quote from Mother Teresa, and it's, spread love everywhere you go. Never let anyone come to you without leaving better and kinder. Be the living expression of God's kindness. Kindness in your eyes, kindness in your face, kindness in your smile, kindness in your warm greeting.
Wow, that is awesome. We're going to look that up and put it on our website and Facebook page.
Words to live by.
It is words to live by. Stephanie Schoenfeld's my guest today with Entrepreneur Radio. She is Mrs. Southeast Boise. And are you climbing the ladder to become Mrs. America?
Yes, absolutely. That's the plan.
Wow. You are a woman of courage.
I want to clarify, there's a lot of different pageant systems out there. Mm-hmm. And the system that I'm in is the Mrs. Idaho America or Mrs. America pageant.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you'd like to be on this program or you know somebody who would be a good addition to our Entrepreneur Radio show, give me a call at 208-429-9275. You can email us at crossroads@sandler.com. If you don't feel qualified to be on the show and you'd like help getting qualified, you might want to check out Sandler Training. We have opportunities for you to learn how to master the art of selling, managing customer service through ongoing reinforcement training. We're going to be back just after this. Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm a Sandler trainer, Jeff Schneider. Jeff is in the Portland, Oregon area. Now, Jeff, Sandler is a trial of ongoing reinforcement and commitment. We ourselves are not immune to this. I'd like you to walk us through some of the frustrations, concerns, intimacies that have developed in your life through this learned transparency.
Wow, where do I start with that, Jim?
Right.
So are you looking for something that has been a struggle or a challenge?
Either that, or it might even be something that you're currently working on. Here's what I find with my journey in Sandler. We train people how to be a better version of themselves by being conscious of what they need to work on today. And there's not a day I don't wake up thinking, I'm going to work on improving this. And it's that constant development that really, it challenges us and it forces us to be self-aware. So what kind of things are you working on to take your game to the next level?
So I've printed something and cut it out, and I put it right here behind my computer so I can stare at it. I did this last week or the week before, and it says, focus on results. Results are red and underlined. And I don't think this is my natural, I know it isn't my natural tendency. I like to just kind of show up and do stuff.
Right.
And my business over the last, you know, 5-6 years has been very strong. And I think it's because, you know, humility aside, I'm a pretty good trainer. And so I've a good reputation here in Portland with the companies and people I've done training for.
Mm-hmm.
And so for quite some time, I just had referrals coming my way with very little effort. And I think that because they were flowing, I tended not to be disciplined in my selling process. I would you know, just be willing to say, okay, what do you want? And all right, here's how much it'll cost. And they said, okay. And so things have dried up a bit because I haven't been prospecting as much for a number of years. And now it's become apparent to me that I've done a lot of trainings that I'm not sure if they produced results or not because I didn't bother to ask. And so now what I'm very, very focused on is when I get together with a prospect that we don't just talk about sales training, but we talk about what results they're trying to improve that would cause them to look to sales training. And if this is a win, then where have we moved the needle and how much do you need to see it move?
Right.
And where is it right now? And how are we going to track them? And so whether it's a brand new individual who's joining President's Club or a client that wants to do a 2-day boot camp or somebody that's talking about a long-term engagement, the area I really need to grow in is being much more results oriented for myself and especially for my clients.
For me, I'm very utilitarian. So return on investment is paramount for me. I don't take on something if I can't measure whether it will be effective. And I want to agree up front with every one of my clients, how are you going to measure my success? One of the things I've developed, I'd be happy to share with you, Jeff, is a workbook on return on investment. It really captures maybe 20, 30 areas where you can see specific return so that we don't enter into a relationship with mutual mystification. I don't want to get that Dear John letter that says this just didn't work. I'm okay with getting it if we mutually agreed on something and it really didn't work, then we shouldn't work together.
Yeah. That's good. I'd love to see that, Jim. I think that's probably exactly what I need.
And I think that focus on results is one of the things that we want our clients to look at, too.
That's right.
Unfortunately, in the Sandler process, it's not like a light switch that you turn on and you get results. You're constantly learning to undo what you've done in the past, and therefore you've got to have the persistence to sow seeds that are going to reap a harvest long term. So how do you make that jive with your focus on results?
Well, I don't know, Jim. That's probably one you need to answer for me. What I know is that when we focus on results, there's a fear, right? And the fear is maybe we won't produce the results. Maybe we'll fall short. But when we do tend to focus on results and we define very clearly what we need to accomplish, as long as we're reasonable about what that ROI is, that we usually find ways to get there. And often it's not even so much about technique or strategy. It's more about behavior. When the owner of the company and the managers know what results we're trying to produce, it's easier to hold the salespeople accountable to doing behavior and simply holding them accountable often increases behavior by 15 or 20%, which lo and behold produces results.
I think one of the challenges with a result-focused evaluation is some results are intangible. So being clear with yourself, I mean, I'm translating this too into what I expect of me. Some of the behaviors that I judge myself on are tangible, but others may be intangible. It may be like Jeff is one of the nicest people on the planet. He never has to work on this. But for me, I have to work on nurturing and being nice. And sometimes that's just intangible. The one way I can measure it is, do I say good morning to everyone first thing in the morning? Because that's something that for me is just, I just show up to work and I'm a machine. I've got my work brain on and I don't chit chat and I need to take time to be human. So I think there's some of those things we need to look at in ourselves and say, can I translate this into something measurable? And if not, what would be a third party observation that would help me understand, hey, I am making progress? Your thoughts?
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. I mean, it's got to be customized for the individual person. But, you know, if it's not measured, it's really not that important. And so by simply deciding to measure something, we're more likely to create a habit which is going to stick and which will ultimately produce results.
Great point. Anything else, Jeff, that you're passionate about right now, you're working on to see transformation not only in yourself, but maybe in the people you serve?
Well, the other one is, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the reason why we picked this topic is just pick up the phone. So I'm trying to discipline myself to do those things which I'm afraid of, those things that I make excuses about, and to draw a certain amount of satisfaction every day from the fact that I'm making the call. So I've got a to-do list every day that says make 5 calls. It doesn't sound like much, but when I make 5 calls minimum, good things tend to happen. Just this morning, I created something we call the Power Hour, and today was the first one with people in my sales mastery class. And so three of us today, 9 to 11 a.m., we just make calls together. They came to my training center, and there was no format. There were no goals. There was no training. It was just, we're going to make calls together, just kind of a shared accountability and esprit de corps around the fact that we're salespeople.
And then,
it was fun.
Then did you kind of kibitz on here's what I learned or here's what happened? Was there some...
We didn't even do much of that, to tell you the truth. It was just simply we knew why we were here. We talked in between. When somebody had a call, you know, there was a little bit of comment. But for the most part, we're pretty focused and just made calls and drank coffee.
Love that. It's really transparency. It's having that shared accountability. Mm-hmm. Doing it with someone can hold your feet to the fire.
Absolutely.
One last time, Jeff, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Sure. Jeff Schneider, phone number 971-227-3266. Email jeffs@sandler.com.
And thank you so much, listeners, for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens, and my calling is to wake people up from the slumber of mediocrity. If they're trapped in a comfort zone and frustrated because they're living with just good enough, ready to accept chaos and volatility in daily business and customer relationships, prone to learn the hard way through trial and error, hoping that eventually you'll get it figured out. If you're ready to give up the insanity of repetition, call me at 208-429-9275. Have a great weekend, and remember, if you measure it, you'll manage it.